Welcome. You are listening to AfterSight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Thank you for joining us for Hobby Radio, read by Keith, amateur radio operator W0NX, featuring the August 2025 The Spectrum Monitor. We'll begin with RF Current, news from the world of communications by Ken Reitz, KS4ZR. Two images on this page show, first, the Pope in white robes, seated in a desk chair, looking at a long control panel. In the background, behind him, are two men looking on. The caption reads, Pope Leo XIV visits the transmitting center of Vatican Radio at Santa Maria di Galleria, courtesy Vatican Media. The other image shows an artist's rendition of a satellite in orbit. The caption reads, 1962 experimental communication satellite Relay 2 depicted in space in this illustration, courtesy NASA. Back to the text. Pope Leo XIV visits Vatican Radio shortwave. A Vatican press release issued June 23rd, reported that Pope Leo XIV visited Santa Maria di Galleria in the extraterritorial zone, Vatican territory, whose status is governed by the Lateran Treaties of Italy, where the shortwave transmission center for Vatican Radio, part of the Dicastery of Communication, is located. The day of his visit coincided with the 43rd anniversary of his ordination. The Holy See Press Office explained that Pope Leo met with the staff of the center and visited the transmitter hall, designed by architect Pier Luigi Nervi, and sat in the control room for shortwave transmissions. According to the press release, Vatican Radio Center was inaugurated by Pope Pius XII in 1957. The last time a pope visited the center and the area of Santa Maria di Galleria was when Pope St. John Paul II did so in 1991. Pope Leo asked questions about the operation of the antennas, broadcasts, and the digital disaster recovery system. Pope Leo noted that during his missionary work in Latin America and Africa, it was invaluable to be able to receive Vatican Radio's shortwave transmissions, which reach places where few broadcasters can, and reaffirmed the missionary value of communication. The press release explained that a project is under consideration to install an agrivoltaic system which would provide not only electrical power to the radio station, but also complete energy self-sufficiency for the Vatican City-State. 1962 satellite speaks briefly after 58 years. According to an article from June 24th in Newsweek, Relay 2, one of a pair of experimental communication satellites launched in 1962 and 1964, woke up last June with a microburst transmission that lasted less than 30 nanoseconds. The satellite was last heard from in 1967. The article notes, despite the fleeting nature of the burst, the Australian Square Kilometer Array Pathfinder, ASKAP, radio telescope, managed to trace it back to its origin. Remember that this launch came only 5 years after the dawn of the satellite age. That's how long this satellite has been in orbit. It is believed that either an electrostatic discharge, ESD, or plasma discharge following a micrometeoroid impact could have set off the burst, the article said. According to NASA archives, the satellite, though configured with two transponders for communications, was also used to map the Earth's radiation belts and refine world maps. Relay 2 was slightly heavier than Relay 1, weighing 170 kilograms, 405 pounds at launch. NASA archives also noted, Relay 2, physically similar to Relay 1, had on board two transmitters, one of which was used for pulse code modulation, PCM telemetry, the sequence requiring about 1 second. Design changes in this satellite improved its performance to the point where response to spurious commands was essentially eliminated. One of the two onboard transponders operated normally until November 20, 1966. From that time until its failure on January 20, 1967, it required a longer time than normal to come on. The other transponder continued to operate until June 9, 1967, when it too failed to operate normally. Relay 2 had an elliptical orbit coming within about 2,100 kilometers, 1,300 miles, and extending out to 7,411 kilometers, 4,600 miles, with an orbital period of 194.6 minutes. An image on this page shows parts of a satellite with the Earth in the background. The caption reads, "A stack of 60 Starlink test satellites atop a Falcon 9 rocket, close to entering orbit, courtesy Starlink." Back to the text. What goes up? CNET reported that on July 1st, an FCC filing by SpaceX, the parent company of Internet service satellite provider Starlink, stated that 472 Starlink satellites burned up in the atmosphere between December 2024 and May 2025. The satellites that travel in a constellation at about 1,200 miles above the Earth have a lifespan of around 5 years. It has now been 5 years since the first of the company's satellites were placed in orbit, and some 7,750 are currently in orbit. The process of deorbiting an end-of-life satellite is done intentionally, so that the satellites do in fact burn up in space. Even so, a 5.5-pound chunk of a Starlink satellite was said to have landed on a farm in Saskatchewan, Canada. Starlink satellites weigh over 1,700 pounds each. Scientists warn that the number of satellites that will burn up in the atmosphere each year will grow considerably over the next 10 years as competing companies and countries launch their own constellations with as many as 100,000 satellites in orbit by 2030, according to an article published in Nature in 2020. At issue are the potential pollutants that could be released into Earth's atmosphere. The CNET report quotes a study funded by NASA that was published in Geophysical Research Letters 1 year ago, stating that a 550-pound satellite releases about 66 pounds of aluminum oxide nanoparticles when it burns up in the atmosphere. These nanoparticles have increased eightfold from 2016 to 2022. Dual-band AM stations seek FCC clarification. Radio World Online, July 13th, noted that comments had been filed with the FCC from attorneys representing certain AM radio stations regarding termination of certain proceedings as dormant under Chairman Carr's Delete, Delete, Delete initiative. At issue is the apparently unresolved proceeding regarding the expanded AM band operating rules. The station's attorneys noted, "When the Commission first adopted its rules for operation in the expanded band, it provided certain existing AM stations with the opportunity to operate an existing station and a paired new station in the expanded band. Dual-band stations. These stations are now anxious not to lose the dual voices in their respective communities." In their comments, the stations asked the FCC to specifically recognize the continued operation of separate programming, as they have done for the last 19 years. The comments by the attorneys concluded, "In today's media environment, The commission has been looking for ways to keep broadcasters operating their stations. The commission does not need to take action that would instead silence stations and abandon their listeners. The stations involved are KZNE 1150 kHz, WTAW 1620 kHz, both owned by Bryan Broadcasting License Corp., WLMV 1480 kHz, WOZN 1670 kHz, both owned by Midwest Management Limited, WNMA 1210 kHz, and WJCC 1700 kHz, both owned by Multicultural Radio Broadcasting Licensee LLC, WHWH 1350 kHz, and WTTM 1680 kHz, both owned by Multicultural Radio Broadcasting Licensee LLC, and KLIB 1110 kHz, and KFSG 1690 kHz, both owned by Way Broadcasting Licensee LLC. OTA TV Solutions. Regarding the review of the AntennaMan ATSC 1.0 receiver in my Radio 101 column for July, TSM reader Tom Hirsch, retired from TV news after 41 years in the industry, and who lives in the Orlando Designated Market Area, DMA, now the nation's 15th largest, noted, "I have my antenna in my attic to protect it from weather, lightning, blowing debris from hurricanes, etc. The coaxial cable from the antenna is connected to a cable TV-type amplifier distribution box with 8 outputs, which go to my TV devices. This setup results in almost 100 available OTA channels." He noted that he had years of frustration using USB flash drives to edit video of anything I recorded off-air. The flash drives I was using apparently couldn't store data at the rate the DVR boxes generate. Anything I tried to edit had video freezes and audio-video synchronization problems. I switched to using SDXC Class 10 cards, the same type of SD cards I used to record HD video with my video cameras. The SD cards solved the problems I had experienced for so long with the USB flash drives. Tom also wanted to note that the photos of the signal generators on page 86 in Radios and Radio Restoration were reversed. The tip of the editor's visor for finding the error in the photos, and for your excellent notes on off-air TV recording. By Ken Reitz, KS4ZR. And now the shortwave listener by Fred Waterer, programming underscore matters at yahoo.ca. RNZI, Texas Shortwave and BBC Fair for August. The radio craze will soon fade. Thomas Edison, 1922. Two images on this page show first a woman with long dark hair, smiling, facing the camera. The image to the right of it shows a man smiling and facing the camera. The caption reads, "Left, Perlina Lau, host of RNZ Culture 101. Right, Mark Amory, host of RNZ Culture 101. Photos courtesy rnz.co.nz. Back to the text. Radio New Zealand International's frequency of 17,675 kHz local evenings has been booming into my area, southern Ontario, western New York, in recent months. It's a treat to listen to if you get the chance. For a broadcaster from a relatively small nation in the South Pacific, RNZ and RNZI punch way above their weight. With Radio Australia gone from the shortwave bands, I really appreciate their coverage of the Pacific region. So, what can one hear on 17,675 kHz? Afternoons. Jesse Mulligan presents an upbeat mix of the curious and the compelling, ranging from the stories of the day to the great questions of our time. Weekdays, from 0100 to 0400. Checkpoint with Lisa Owen is RNZ's weekday drive-time news program, Our People, Stories and Breaking News and Interviews, 0400 to 0600 UTC. Music 101, music interviews, live performances, behind the scenes, industry issues, profiles, back catalog, undiscovered, greatest hits, tall tales, and true, all from an Aotearoa perspective. The program airs from 1 to 5 p.m. each Saturday, New Zealand time, which works out to 0100 to 0500 UTC. Music 101 was hosted for many years by Charlotte Ryan. She left the program in March, and host duties have been in flux since. This may be related to a new cost-cutting government. Culture 101. Perlina Lau and Mark Emery host a weekly show about creativity and culture in Aotearoa. Sundays between 12 to 4 p.m. New Zealand time, 0100 to 0400 UTC. At 0130, At the Movies, and at 0305, Drama, featuring radio playwriting and performance. Perlina Lau. Of Kiwi Chinese heritage, Perlina has been involved in the arts for her whole adult life. First as a musician, she plays piano and cello, and then as creative as part of the wildly successful Flat 3. Their latest series, Creameries, won Best Drama at the New Zealand TV Awards and has now been picked up by Australian television and streaming giant Hulu, raising her profile further and seeing her invited to participate on TV for programs like Celebrity Treasure Island and The Great Comedy Debate 2023. In media, Perlina worked on The Paul Henry Show as social media presenter and producer before moving to The Project, with several years in London at BBC World. She returned to Auckland in 2020, joining RNZ to produce and host World Watch, continuing her work covering world news. 3 years on, Perlina jumped at the opportunity to create RNZ's arts and culture program, Culture 101, in a rare role that allows her to combine her passion for broadcasting and the creative industries. Mark Amory. Mark has been committed to radio and Aotearoa's arts and culture for over 30 years. Based in Wellington, Mark has worked as lead producer of Saturday Morning with Kim Hill on RNZ National, and as a weekly culture writer and contributing arts editor at newspaper The Post. Mark began in radio at 95 FM in the 1990s, as weekly producer and presenter of arts show The Culture Bunker for 5 years. He went on to co-host radioactive arts show Caffeine and Aspirin. Pre-COVID, he was a relief producer and presenter on RNZ's Standing Room Only, and has been a longtime arts commentator with RNZ and across the print media. Mark has a passion for the role of culture as central to all our lives. He co-founded public arts organization Letting Space in 2009, the subject of a Massey University press book, and co-created with Wellington Public Housing Tenants a Citizens Newspaper and Lightbox project, The People's Voice, in 2023. From the Isle of Music, August 2025. August's program will be the third of several episodes featuring the best of Cuba Disco 2025, Cuba's most important discographic awards. This is the best of the best of Cuba's new releases. Friday, August 8th, 6,070 kHz at 1,700 UTC, 3,955 kHz at 2,100 UTC. Sunday, August 10th, 9,670 kHz at 1,700 UTC, using Booster Beam East to Eastern Europe and Eurasia. Repeat of July 11th episode. Uncle Bill's Melting Pot, August 2025. In August, we will feature music from Syria and the Syrian diaspora. Friday, August 15th, 6,070 kHz at 1,700 UTC, 3,955 at 2,100 UTC. Sunday, August 17th, 9,670 kHz at 1,700 UTC, using Beam East, repeat of July 18th episode. Note, for those who were avoiding 3,955 due to mixing product issues at the station, we have been informed that this has been fixed. In addition to direct radio reception, we do honor reception reports using remote SDRs as long as the whole program is described and which SDR is specified. William Bill Tilford, owner, producer, Tilford Productions, LLC. Email bill@tilfordproductions.com. That's TILFORD productions.com. Website tilfordproductions.com. Texas Radio Shortwave, broadcasting to the world from Germany. August-October 2025 schedule. Music of Bobby Fuller for month, August. Date, the 1st UTC. Time, 1900 UTC. Frequency, 6160 kHz. Station, shortwave radio. Target, Europe. August 3rd, 1200 UTC, 9670 kHz. Channel 292, target Europe. August 3rd, 2300 UTC, 9670 kHz, channel 292, target North America. August 6th, 2000 UTC, 3975 and 6160 kHz, shortwave radio, target Europe. Music of Leanne Womack. September 5th, UTC, 1900 UTC, 6160 kHz, shortwave radio, target Europe. September 7th, 1200 UTC, 9670 kHz, channel 292, target Europe. September 7th, 2300 UTC, 9670 kHz, channel 292, target North America. September 10th, 2000 UTC, 3975 and 6160 kHz, shortwave radio, target Europe. Look for changes in October as we retime our broadcasts over shortwave radio to match shorter day lengths. We'll continue this article next time. Thank you for joining us for Hobby Radio, read by Keith.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.